Hello. Welcome to a special edition of the Tetracast, where on the normal feed you will have listened to the thoughts on Tokyo Game Show from the guys at home. I know that went out this morning. I don't know if you've listened to it yet.
I haven't listened to it.
But I'm joined here by James, and I'm Alex, because James and I are on the ground here in Tokyo. So we're currently on a rooftop of a hotel, and there's beers approaching, but this is what we do. We're doing it live. We're in my hotel, which is in Shibuya. The rooftop has a very cool view of the Scramble. If you walk, you actually can't get to the Scramble view because they put the DJ where the Scramble view is.
Yeah.
You'll probably be able to hear the low of the DJ in the background. And there's a lot of them. I'm painting a picture for you here. There's a lot of umbrellas on this rooftop, and some of them are threatening to take off because after two or three glorious days where it was far too hot, really.
Yeah.
It's cooled off, and there's definitely signs a storm.
Yeah.
When are you back, James?
Well, I'm leaving tomorrow afternoon. My flight's scheduled for 5, so just going to check out and probably head directly to the airport. Probably get a lot of writing done, I'd say. Makes sense.
Yeah, there's stuff I've got stuff to write from TGS and even stuff to write from not TGS, which is annoying. Yeah, I'm off tomorrow morning, but it's been a crazy whirlwind trip. But I think you've seen more. Well, talk to me about the show. What did you think?
So it's a tale of two TGSs, I'd say. Mm. The big players is probably the strongest TGS I've been to, which I've been to every TGS since 2023. Mm. And even back in 2023, as someone that did manage to like cover E3 back in the heyday before it went public, it was really eye-opening to be like, oh, shows like this still exist, because I've never done Gamescom.
Well, they almost didn't, in the sense that on my last TGS was 2018, and that one was fucking awful.
Yeah.
It was diabolically bad, and I was like, it's over. Like, it's over for this show. So I obviously haven't been for the last few years. You've been for the last few years. But for me coming back post-2018, I was like, oh, this is legit now.
Yeah.
Which is quite a shocker, really.
And I think what really kind of sets the stage for the big players is that every company had some, like, multiple major games they were showcasing this year. Like, Koei Tecmo obviously had, they're publishing Hyrule Warriors this year. They've got Neo 3. Konami just released Silent Hill F, which is, like, a megaton, I'd imagine, just because they're back and, like, everyone's
well, I think up. They're one of the big stories, right? In the sense that, they've gone from being irrelevant to being huge.
Yeah.
It's interesting because when you say it's Tale of Two TGSs, for me, you explain how you meant that, but to me, I agree with that. And how I agree with that is this. You have a really strong show. We're walking around the show floor. It's really quite impressive. It's still very mobile focused, but actually less so than it was back in 2018. Feels like the Switch has revived the console industry. But it's not a show where people make announcements. So it's quite thin on the ground in terms of if you're watching this from home, I imagine it feels relatively mid. Because it's not a show where you're getting earth-shattering announcements. You know, you sort of, Xbox had a TGS stream that was pretty weak. Sony had a stream that happened to take place in TGS week, but was really nothing to do with TGS. And then Square Enix, Capcom, they've all got streams, but none of them are places where they're talking about anything. Capcom's had a little bit of stuff.
Yeah.
Capcom's the one that, I mean, we both spent a good bit of time there, I think.
Yeah.
And they actually had some stuff to show. But it's weird. But it is two shows in that sense. But I think one of those two shows is really good.
Yeah, I agree with that too. But the thing that I'm kind of honing in on, and one of the aspects of TGS that really stuck with me my first time I went, was the indies, the smaller developers, not your big AAA Capcoms, Bandai Namco, that sort of thing. But the smaller players, maybe not even necessarily indie, but like this, like the companies that are just like in between.
So Annapurna had a very big booth, which obviously that's a movie production company, but in games, they're quite a new upstart force.
Yeah.
And they had quite a large stand.
Yeah.
And they were showing one game that's fully an RPG, one game that's sort of RPG adjacent. And I was like, huh.
Yeah, and I did have an appointment with them. So I did play their almost their whole slate. And
yeah.
So I'm going to write up. By the time this goes live, maybe you'll see previews for that already up.
Yeah, I'll try and get this out once I'm home. So Monday night, Tuesday morning.
But what I meant more along the lines was there was a bit of a kerfuffle with the Hall 9 and through 11 that that has been the merchandise and indie hall for the last several years. And this time they cut out a significant portion of that hall to make way for an AI section.
Yeah.
And as a result, the selected Indie 80, which was all of these like super small teams, were just not even in the hall. They were in the like outside the hall lined up.
That's not nice.
Yeah. And it's like stuff like that is genuinely like one of my favorite things about it. Like I'm going to be writing up something for, it's not an RPG, but it's like an adventure game. We can cover stuff like that. Time Moon. Really fascinating stuff. And it's like, just looking at that, it's like, man. But I do agree that as far as like the overall health of Tokyo Game Show, it this year especially, if I had already felt that way before, which I did, this year has really solidified it. Because it's like, everyone had something that they were showing off. Like, Bandai Namco had a new Katamari game. They had a huge show of it.
They had them rolling, but not rolling around literally, but they had the Katamari guys dressed up, you know, in the, which I enjoyed.
Yeah.
I mean, talking about what you obviously you said, indies, triple A's, I know you, talking about what you saw, I mean, I know you went to the, I'm curious, and obviously a friend of the site, Andy Robinson of VGC, was also there, but I know you went to the Final Fantasy.
The embargo for that interview is lifted yet.
Yeah, but it's before this will go out, right? Because isn't it tomorrow?
No, I mean, it has lifted.
Oh, it has lifted.
It lifted like at midnight.
Oh, right. Same time as Resident Evil then, yeah.
Yeah, I just didn't bother to get it done. Because I'm not going to talk about it separately. I'm just going to have like an aside and my hands-on with the actual fight itself. Yeah, I'll be honest. There's some interesting stuff that came out of that interview, but it was mostly kind of just nothing. Especially that one person that
I've heard about it. I'm not going to put someone on blast on a podcast, but I've heard about the last question.
The second to last question.
Well, yes,
Andy was the last question.
But yeah, but they sort of extended it because the last question was so bad. It's my understanding.
Yeah, I heard that. It was like, why are you even doing
this? Yeah, but
Monster Hunter Stories 3 is really
let's talk about that, because I've played that as well. So, and
have you played the previous ones?
I played the first one.
Did you play two?
The first one sort of...
It's just whatever. It's okay.
Yeah, it sort of left me cold. Like, I could see what it was about. Yeah. Wasn't really bothered.
A lot of what 3 changes is kind of continuing the momentum from 2.
Well, I'm curious, and don't spoil your article too much. Obviously, you spoke to the team.
Yes.
I spoke to the team for Eurogamer. And so, I don't know, did you have Ryozo as well?
Yes.
Okay, so...
That was interesting to me, because I didn't expect him to take such a strong...
Neither did I, yeah. But in the interview that I did with them, they were very keen to push this narrative of...
this is something different for us.
Well, I don't quite know why they've called it Monster Hunter Stories 3, because they were very keen in saying, this is a new narrative thread, new protagonist, new Raphalos, and we're reapproaching everything. Like they were saying, oh, we are... Literally,
I don't think it needed the number. I think they could have just gone off the subtitle.
Well, that's what I mean. They were saying to me that, yes, Monster Stories existed before, but they were like, when we did Monster Stories 1, we looked at Monster Hunter and we looked at JRPGs. And really interesting, Suzumoto-san, one of those people who absolutely uses the term JRPG, use it like 20 times. Which, you know, there's that whole debate in this country, right?
Which is interesting, because he said...
Someone should have asked that about...
He said RPG when I was talking. He never said JRPG in my interview.
He said JRPG multiple times in his talk to me. But... he basically said, we looked at JRPGs, we looked at Monster Hunter, and we tried to convert Monster Hunter to JRPG. And he was like, and then for Stories 2, we just sort of continued what we'd already done. And then he was like, for this game, we went back to zero and once again looked at the mechanics and systems and the iconography of Monster Hunter and converted it again from scratch.
Yeah, and I did... And even though he says that, you can definitely see some elements that are very much a direct continuation of Teal.
Well, they
I see what he means, though.
It is still Monster of Stories 3 at the end, but it does seem like, and the tone's quite different.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And I was chatting to them about the fact that it's a Monsters game that's got human-on-human conflict.
Like, one of the core, things with the story is that there's two different countries and there's tensions between them. And it's like, you never get anything like that in Monster Hunter.
But it's always in the background in Monster Hunter, right? Yeah. They always just talk about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm really intrigued by that.
And there's, a proper, party.
Yes.
You didn't get that in Stories 1 and 2. You got people that would hop in for a bit and 2, but nothing.
And it's AAA looking.
Yeah.
I don't love that you don't have as much control over that party.
Yeah.
It's giving Persona 3 vibes.
I think that's fine because it's one of those things where you don't really have direct control over the monster most of the time either.
No. But I'm definitely really interested in it.
The game looks great.
I'm interested in what it's presenting.
On PS5 from what I played.
Yeah, did you play the Switch version? I didn't.
I did. It's tricky because it's still 6 months out.
So I
don't know how much.
Of course.
At the best of times, it looks and runs really well, and they have enough time to really any rough edges smooth out. So I'm not too worried. It looks great. Runs great. I love the additional RPG elements that they've added to it. And I say RPG elements, So, you did not play Monster Hunter Stories 2. So, one thing they did is...
I think I did, but not very much of it.
So, in the first game, you only had the one weapon you could equip at a time.
Yeah.
And in the second game, you could equip 2 at a time.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, you have 3 at a time. And because of that, they're really focusing in on different monsters' body parts.
Yes.
Have different weaknesses. They have, the penultimate boss in the demo had the whole thing where it's like, okay, you want to break this thing on its back, but if you attack it,
it will counter.
It will counter, so you have to wait. And then, but when you wait, I really do like it. It was a good demo.
Yeah.
TGS, one of the problems, especially this year, is there's been too many demos that were super, super short and didn't give me a feel for the game. This one did not happen.
No, that was good. That was good.
Yeah.
I will say, it's not non-RPG, but the other big demo Capcom had was Pragmata. And I should just say, I think they sort of screwed up the marketing beats for that game a little bit because you don't get that many shots at previews explaining what your game is. But I think because they were worried about the game being too complicated, they sort of hid the game.
A Metroidvania.
They hid the fucking loop of the game. They were just like, please just try this demo to understand what this combat is. And it was like, well, that's interesting, but... what they showed here is this game is so much more than the combat. And you saw the loop of you've got a home base and you're going back and forth to the home base and some genuinely fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
So we will see how that reaches the public now. I wish they'd spoke about that earlier. Could have done without the Gamescom beat in there where they showed the same stuff as SGF, but just a boss as well.
The boss now.
Yeah.
It's like, why'd they even... prevents us from doing the boss at Summer Games.
Well, they're clearly scared's the wrong word. Scared's very uncharitable. They're clearly nervous about people not understanding what the game is, which I get. But, come on. is all I can say to that. But, so saw that. Listen, it all runs well on Switch. I don't really have anything else to say about that. It shows that the problem with RE Engine is scope, is scale. I think anything that's smaller.
But you played RE9 and Switch?
Yeah.
I saw over the shoulder and it looked very smooth.
It's fine. It's just worse hair and worse lighting, and that's pretty much. And obviously some textures and stuff are going to be worse, but on that screen,
especially
I'm sure blown up on a TV.
Yeah.
It'll probably look a bit ropey, but
if you want to play it on a TV, you can get it on PlayStation or Xbox.
When I play it on a TV, even if you don't have a PlayStation or an Xbox, I'm pretty sure it's a GeForce Now game, for instance. So you've got options. In the GeForce Now app for Switch, that'd be nice. Speaking of Switch ports, I played Persona 3.
Hmm. I didn't bother to check that out because there was already a demo on the eShop.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Did
you play Kiwami 3?
I did not. No, did you?
No.
Oh.
Because I was already packed by the time they announced
it. Yeah. I've got to be honest, though. sort of know what those games are.
Yeah.
A little bit. Then again, says the man who went and played Persona 3. But, yeah, it's, I'm intrigued by that, but I am worried about them doing a game a year.
I mean, that's how it always has been. So doing like a remake, well, and with how Yakuza is, it's like they have to remake Okinawa and RE Engine. But besides that, it's like all reused assets. Though.
I wonder if some of this remake thinking is when we've remade these areas, then they become unlocked for use in the main series.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
Because, you know, you're remaking it because that's what they do, right?
Yeah.
So by remaking Okinawa, it's like we've got that now.
We
got that in our back pocket. So I guess that's it. What else did you see?
So actually, let me look at what my schedule was because I have Google Calendar and whatnot. Seen so much stuff, it's kind of hard to keep track.
You can probably hear, listeners, that I am yawning as I say this.
And as I pad for time as James looks up his calendar on his phone. But
yeah,
it's been a very tiring week.
So I did see Level 5.
Oh, yes.
Obviously, both the stuff. Well,
Inazuma 11. I'm American. I don't know why I played it. It's football. I am not the target
audience. I like Inazuma Eleven.
Yeah, it was fun. I'm definitely interested in checking it out. It's just and
I like sports RPGs.
Yeah, it seems neat. It's also fascinating how both of the games at Level 5 showed off this time were the Switch 2 versions of each game.
Because
like Professor Layton, which is kind of like not really within our scope, maybe who knows, but that was the Switch 2 version this time. They had a demo for the Switch 1 version last year. This one's like, we have mouse controls. You can use the mouse for it. And it's like, you know what? For Professor Layton, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But,
it's a lot of, I think you're not going to see Switches anymore, basically, events. I think by the time we're going to, because really, this is the last big event of the year. There's Gamescom Asia, which is Taipei this year, I think. But,
it was very surprising.
That's more of a businessy show.
The discussion about how maybe certain developers have had trouble getting dev kits. You would not think.
Well, I think it's been easier in Japan than in the West.
Exactly.
I know quite big developers who didn't get Switch 2 dev kits until like right around when it came out.
Yeah.
And it's kind of mad and kind of ridiculous. Like, you're like, how much do you want support or not to Nintendo? Like, do you want these guys to put their games out on your machine or not? Like, fucking hell. Nintendo's definitely not brilliant on that front. But, you know, from a perspective of why would you show your game on Switch?
Yeah.
I mean, I did the Pokemon preview the other week, and of course they're not showing that fucking Switch 2 version of that game.
Yeah.
That Switch 1 version of that game. I said to someone who worked there, I was like, have you seen the Switch 1 version? They're like, no, I haven't actually. I was like, yeah, I'm not fucking surprised. Fucking hide that. That won't be seen probably until the date comes out.
Yeah,
I would be astonished. I mean, not many people get Pokemon review code anyway, but I'd be astonished if the review code that goes out actually works on Switch 1.
It has to, because of the way Switch 2 editions work.
It doesn't, because I had review code of a Nintendo game quite recently where it was a game that was compatible on both machines, but it didn't boot on one. It just gave an error message until they issued a patch.
Really?
So there's things...
There's ways
stuff like that could be massaged. So we'll see. I'll just be curious if, on embargo, anyone is able to actually definitively say how that game runs on Nintendo Switch.
Well, I have a Switch 2 edition physical pre-ordered at my local store. Mm. So if nothing else, I can check it out on Switch.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll see. Yeah. But Pokemon always take a bit of a different approach to review code. So who knows if we will have it early or not. I would hope, you know, that we would be higher on the list for this one because it's more of an RPG.
They let us do the preview event this time, so that's a good sign.
Yeah, and we had a good preview of that, but on the site. But yeah, anyway, it doesn't surprise me to not see Switch ones very much. And it seems like there's plentiful Switch 2 stock here. I thought they were still having troubles here, but
they're still having troubles. Like if you're following like the weekly sales, it's plateaued at like 40,000, 45,000 a week, and it seems like they're probably stockpiling for the holidays.
Yeah, but you can walk 10 minutes from here to the Nintendo store and just pick one up, I think, if you're Japanese.
Yeah,
if you're willing to have the Japanese language wrong, because there's that whole thing. I also noticed like the tax free shops have all barred Switch 2 from tax free.
I mean, that makes sense.
I was just quite surprised to see that. But not just the machines, the games as well. And
The games too? That's not what I've run into.
If you go down to Don Quixote, Switch 2 hardware and software and accessories are all not on the tax-free.
Interesting. Because I did get a used copy of Star Wars Outlaws.
Well, used would be different, I guess.
Yeah.
So used game key card.
Well, yeah, it's not like, I mean, it doesn't.
I suppose it doesn't register to your account, does it? So it doesn't
The license is on the game key card. Yeah. It's like, I wasn't going to get it, but it was like 5,000 yen. So it's like, oh, shit, I'll pick that up for like $30.
Yeah, that's quite reasonable. But
download that on my hotel Wi-Fi before I hit the plane.
I need to write a review on the plane.
Yeah.
But because I don't know when this is going to go out, I'm not going to say what it's for. Konami looking good, Capcom looking good, Sega looking good,
Bandai Namco looking good.
Bandai Namco.
I'm surprised that they didn't have Code Vein 2 playable.
Yeah, well, it wasn't. Well, I mean, you were there. You saw it at Summer Games Fest. It was fucked.
Yeah.
It looked, performance-wise, I'm sure it's going to be a good game because the first one was decent, but the performance was... And look, here's the thing. We, in this job, we see games in all manner of conditions pre-release.
I remember when I played through Wolong.
Yeah.
A month and a half before it came out, the PC version I played was a very different experience, both visually and performance-wise, from the final version that released. Like, they released the patch 3 weeks before the game came out, and it was like, transform.
Well, this is, these things, we see games in all sorts of conditions, and I think the average consumer would be astonished at how much happens to games in that last, that is a baby crying really loud, how much happens in that last 10% of development, optimization-wise. So I'm sure Code Vein is going to be fine. But even by the standards of what we see as media, it's got more curated over the years. I think because of the rise of influencers and stuff like that. And maybe there's an attitude of influencers are perhaps a little bit less, sometimes a little bit less understanding, sometimes a little bit less discerning.
Yeah.
About what they see. Traditional media, we talk to devs a bit more, I guess, and understand it a bit more. I don't know. Whatever reason, or sensationalist journalism as well, there was a rise in that. But the point is, publishers became much more careful about what they would show.
Yeah.
And would only show more polished stuff. So I remember the difference between the demos I saw at trade shows for like Mass Effect 2. Versus the demo I saw for Dragon Age Inquisition. I know, 5 years apart, but like the level of control and fakery in the case of the Dragon Age one in order to make sure nothing was, or any game like that. I remember when they just put like weird experimental shit in front of you. I remember playing Final Fantasy 14 1.0 in 3D.
That's interesting.
You can
still kind of do that with like a mod. There's a VR mod for 14.
But this was like an official thing at E3 during the 1.0 period. They were doing, was it some of the glasses free 3D monitors they had, maybe? I don't remember.
Yeah.
But
last year there was actually like a couple of companies showing off like new glasses 3.
Yeah.
Glasses,
oh yeah, the tech works. But anyway, my point is, companies have got more careful, and what they showed of Code Vein at Summer Games Fest was like something you would have been shown 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
It was so all over the place performance-wise. It looked quite polished visually, so I'm not surprised it's not playable, because if that's what it's still like, then
it's
you ain't going to let
like
the public touch that.
2.5 months.
Three
and a half months.
But yeah, and Square in a funny spot. They continue to be in that reboot sort of spot.
I kind of wish that Dragon Quest VII was playable, but I'm sure won't have to wait too.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be a beat for that soon. But I'm surprised that they didn't have more on that here.
Yeah.
Their booth was pretty much 1-2.
It was neat to see the dolls that they made to model the...
Oh, were they on the booth?
Yeah, they were.
Didn't see that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
There was a couple of companies that had little like kind of exhibition style booths. Like, usually Falcom will have demos for their upcoming games, but because TGS this year was after Trails of the Sky remake dropped and they knew that everyone's probably going to be playing it, they actually had a really fascinating, like, exhibit of like reference material from like both the original game and the remake in terms of like development.
Oh, that's cool.
Really neat. They even had the original artwork for the CGs in the ending movie, which is like, oh, I can't share photos of that.
Huh. Yeah, that's the thing about TGS, right?
Yeah.
Like, TGS has more stuff like that. And I've got a lot of time for that, to be quite frank.
Yeah.
It feels like a more real experience of a show. But that's because the consumers that come want more of an experience as well. They don't necessarily want to just line up for 8 hours to play 5 minutes or 20 minutes of Persona 3, which they've already played.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that. Even on the business day, the line for Persona 3 was so long. I got line skipped and I felt really bad. And I was like, what the fuck are all these people waiting 45 minutes an hour to
play? I was hearing that a bunch of the line for Final Fantasy VII on Switch was like probably one of the longest lines of the show.
That's going to do really well here.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think it's going to do that well
here.
I
very briefly checked it out at a separate thing like in LA, like literally the day before I flew out.
Yes.
And that is really impressive in handheld mode. I don't know about a talk, but like handheld, it's like, yeah, that.
I'll be curious how it stacks up to Steam Deck, because I remember installing Remake on Steam Deck.
It's very good.
And then playing a bit of it and being like, I don't want to play this on Steam Deck.
For me, it was one of those things where I had Remake on, like,
This was when it was first out, so maybe it's been optimized since. Mikhail's the one to ask.
It's fairly optimized. The main problem with me is that on the original Steam Deck, I never wanted to play it because of, like, the storage size and also, like, how much of a guzzler for the battery it is. So when I got my OLED, it's like, oh, I can play this on HDR and the battery's better, so it'll actually run for longer. And I actually did, like, a significant amount of my playthrough, like, in the prep for a Rebirth on my Steam Deck OLED.
Yeah, we'll see on that front. And Rebirth, I don't know how that's going to run on. Well, how well that's going to run on Switch, too. We'll see.
Actually, very briefly talked with Hamaguchi-san, I asked them about that. It's like, how much has, like, up until now, the Final Fantasy VII Remake project has been like, oh, we developed for it for one platform, then he moves to the next, then he moves to the next. It's like one by one by one. But if they're going multi-platform for the final title and, like, assumedly Rebirth and all these ports to Remake, it's like, how is that impacting development? And he was, like, very coy about it. It's like, oh, we have separate teams working on it. Don't worry about it. It's like, we'll have to see. But it's, I am interested to see how Rebirth runs on that thing.
Yeah. But it doesn't surprise me that it had big lines. I think that was one of the big themes as well. It was all about Switch 2 ports, really.
Yep.
It shows that how Switch 2 is just the...
I'm sure...
It's the market now.
I'm sure, give it like a couple of months, they'll announce a Switch 2 version of Silent Hill F. Something like that.
Yeah. Is Delta on?
No.
No. That as well, right? So what else? Did you see anything else? That I'm in the weird position where a lot of what I saw, a lot of people that I spoke to, I can't talk about for quite some time. I'm sort of, I'm teeing up a lot of stuff for next year. We've got a banner year for the website next year. And so, you know, a lot of stuff's been thrown together for that. And
I saw Let It Die Inferno, which surprisingly enough, not a free-to-play game this time. This time not a full price release, but you actually have to pay for it.
Yeah, well,
it's also fascinating, not really talking about the game so much, but it's like, did you play the original? So it's interesting seeing them use in marketing, like, the Extraction, like, genre name, which makes sense because it's like, that was kind of like an Extraction game before that genre was even
existed.
It's neat. I played about, like, 45 minutes of it. I don't know if it's close enough for an RPG, but I'll write up something about it. Because it's like, there's meta progression and whatnot.
Yeah.
That was neat. Like I said, I played Koei Tecmo stuff. I played the new Hyrule Warriors. That was not a great demo.
I played that also, I agree, yeah.
The one thing that it told me that was very important was that it looks good and it runs well enough. So that's important. Neo 3 was also, I never had a chance to play the alpha demo because I was like busy at the time. It was interesting how, like, that was, like, one of the few demos at the show that was locked in Japanese. Wasn't a problem for me, but it was like, oh, man. That's looking interesting. Hopefully that PC version is good.
Yes. Japan's still grappling with that, right? Although most devs are getting it right, it has to be said. And even when they've got it wrong, it's like the whole Monster Hunter thing is not really about PC. It's about
everything.
About RE Engine and lots of problems across the board.
It's just crazy to me how like Nihon Falcom, after like over 15 years not doing anything on PC development, comes out, releases this remake of Trails in the Sky, in-house PC port, and it's instantly one of the best PC versions of like PC releases of the year. It's like, what are we doing?
Well, they paid attention, and it's a smaller game as well, right? So
yeah. Well, it's a custom engine though.
Smaller ships can turn more quickly.
Yeah.
Than giant monoliths.
I'm sure they're reusing a bunch of the code that Durante wrote for.
I'm sure. It's been a good show. And I will say the thing I love about TGS, is Japanese developers being, when you're on their home turf, being, I feel like they're more relaxed, they're more candid.
Yeah.
People opening up laptops and saying, have a look at this, and it's an unannounced game or a cancelled game.
It's definitely one of those things where, this kind of comes back to the main feeling I got from my first TGS, is that so many of these developers, obviously the larger ones, your Capcom and whatnot, they're going to get the reach no matter what.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, so many of these smaller, like, mid-tier or, like, indie developers, they want to reach out to the West. They want to reach out to not just the West, but worldwide. But they either don't have the resources to do so, or they just don't know how. So, like, when you go to TGS as Western Press and you show, like, an interest in those games, it's, like, immediate, like, they want to accommodate you. They will do anything they can to make sure that you have a good experience with their game.
Yeah, and the Japanese indie scene is that's one of the things.
One of these days, I would like to do BitSum. And I know it's difficult because Junior lives in Kyoto. But...
Well, also one of the most common threads I heard this week was, please come to BitSum.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh, we have a guy who comes, and they've moved it. They've moved it out of the Sweatbox month. Mm. So I think it's May now or whatever instead of June. So it just means it's actually a time of year when the weather is manageable. Because it is hype of fuck the time of year they used to be before.
And it's like, as hot as it's been this year for Tokyo Game Show, it's been cooler this year than the last couple of years.
Has it?
Yeah.
So I was not expecting it to be 32 degrees. Like, awful. And that was it. You mean you went to the show floor on a public day, didn't you? I didn't go on yesterday.
I did go on the public day today. I was like literally just in and out for my gung-ho appointment. And inside baseball, gung-ho was offering the appointment for Let It Die Inferno, but they did not say what it was until it was officially announced.
Classic.
By the time it was officially announced, it's like, well, I want to see it.
Mm.
What do you have available on the business days? Obviously, I was booked out. It's like, oh, well, we have 10 a.m. on Monday. It's like, fuck it, fine.
Yeah. Not nice, though.
Yeah. Literally, like, over an hour on the train, though. I did get a chance to test out one of the toys I got while I was here in because of tax-free and, like, all the tariffs and nonsense. I got a new PC gaming handheld.
Oh, what did you buy?
The MSI Claw.
Oh.
It's interesting because it's like one of the few Intel-based ones.
Yes.
And like the first Claw was dog shit. But the new one, it's a Lunar Lake-based. So it's like competitive with the AMD offerings. But since it has Intel in it, you can use XeSS, which means upscaling is actually fucking decent.
I like the ergonomics of it as well, actually. I'm holding it for people listening.
Yeah.
Well, it won't be long until we have our hands on that Xbox One.
Yeah. Also, I told Mikhail that if he needs any backup to, like, add
stuff. Yeah. Well, I'm sure I need to have a chat with Mikhail about the Xbox thing launching, I think.
Yeah.
It makes sense for him to do some stuff.
But
it's been a good show. And I want to do more of these. I mean, it probably inside baseball for people who listen to this episode, like, you know, we're making a bunch of changes on the site, and we had a week off podcast where we made a bunch of changes back end on the podcast. We want to have a way for people to directly support us, get rid of ads on the website and on the podcast. And part of that is I'm hoping if we do that, we can do more shit like this.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't know when the next time will be. Yeah. I mean, GDC at the latest.
Yeah. Some more inside baseball, just to not really go into depth, but to explain to people, like a lot of gaming outlets, they use like pre-built like backends. So when it comes to like removing ads, it's a bit easier. But since RPG site is completely custom, that means that we've been wanting to do this for years, but it's all about like bandwidth and like actually getting it viable.
Yeah, and we have to pick and choose quite carefully between if we want to do 10 things, but we only have time to do two. What two of the 10 things are we going to do? Yeah. But all that stuff is moving in a good direction. And I want to, like I say, I almost put us on video for this, but then where we're at is very windy. And there's a DJ and there's quite a lot of public around, which wasn't the case when we did, because I did VGC's podcast down here yesterday. And there was no one here. So me and Andy just had all that to ourselves. However, it was hot as balls. And I just looked like a sweaty fiend in that video because it was just, we were just in absolute glaring sunlight. But hopefully a bit more video as well. But yeah, it's lovely to be out here. And actually it's lovely to, obviously you've been out the last few years, but like there's a great deal of gratification in handing over the business card and having
the recognition.
Japanese people know us, which is really cool. And that seems to be getting better all the time. We're definitely heading to storm territory here. I think the noise cancelling is so good, you guys won't be able to hear any of this wind or indeed any of these parasols that are about to be blown off the roof.
Like, and there's like six of these parasols, and down. Like the entire, like to our right, there's like a row of three of them. Just like a few seconds ago, like all
they're
three
gonna,
of them looked like they were about to take.
They're going
to
be taken into the air and then fly down onto the Shibuya Scramble and crush someone. But you know, which if that actually happens now, it'll be terrible that I said that. But I'm sure it won't because they are like chained now.
They look weighted down at least.
Yeah. But yeah, I think anything else from TGS you want to highlight on this pod before we go?
I don't really think anything specific, really, because I already kind of said it, really. Every major Japanese game developer has been out like in full force this year, even if they haven't been showing anything new to us in terms of like stuff that was playable at Gamescom or Summer Game Fest. Just you look at Square Enix, what they're showcasing, you look at Capcom, Konami, Koei Tecmo, Bandai Namco, Sega Atlas, and it's like, the Japanese gaming industry is at the top of their game.
Yeah. Yeah. Something that Andy from VGC was saying, and I do see it, is he was positing the theory that Capcom has obviously soared, and Capcom might be hitting a bit of a plateau at the minute. But
I would not be shocked after this upcoming year because they have like four like major games.
I'm sure they've still got many, many more major games, but I just think that meteoric, no rise that's sharp can continue forever. But Andy was saying he thinks it might be Sega's turn next. And I can see that.
I can see it too.
Honestly,
I think the shift has already happened. It might be Koei Tecmo.
They're still the problem with Koei Tecmo is they've got Neo and stuff, but they still often give support studio secondary. You know what I mean? Like not support studio, but their biggest upcoming game really is a Nintendo IP. You know
I wouldn't say that. I'd say Neo 3 and Ninja Gaiden 4 are both massive games.
I suppose Ninja. I forget Ninja Gaiden because
Ninja
Xbox
Gaiden
4, isn't fucking
had,
here.
They had Dynasty Warriors
how
Origins.
How do you just on a quick aside? How the fuck do you have? Are you publishing Ninja Gaiden 4 and then don't show up to the show?
They would probably say we did show up at the ASUS booth.
What they've done this week is actually baffling to me in the sense that, okay, you've announced Forza Horizon 5, set in Japan, it's probably going to be a Game of the Year contender next year. The Forza Horizons are all fucking incredible.
It's probably going to be one of the best songs.
And Japan is the perfect setting. Japan's street racing scene, Honda MSXs and all that sort of shit. It's going to be amazing.
So I didn't actually check. Is that a holiday release next year?
They haven't said anything. This is what I was about to say. They had the shittest trailer you could possibly imagine, where the trailer was like not CG, but in-engine, you know.
Thing. For anyone listening, the reason we're talking about Forza Horizon is it's a car PG.
It is actually, genuinely, but that's another discussion entirely. But no, but just we're broadly talking about Xbox, right?
Yeah.
Like, that trailer would be fine if that trailer was like a bolt from the blue. Yeah. You never knew it was coming. Oh my God, fuck, it's set in Japan. Everybody fucking knew it was coming. Everybody knew it was in Japan. So why debut with that trailer? Because there's no sense of surprise.
To be fair, as someone that has been at the show the last like several years, it's nothing new. Like their TGS showcases have been the same thing for the last 3 years.
Nah, this one's worse, man. This one was diabolically bad.
And okay, what was announced in the last 2 years? One of them was we finally got Octopath Traveler 2 on Xbox, and that was their big announcement.
Yeah, I suppose they got Monster Hunter Stories 1 and 2, mate. But this year. But this is what I mean, though. How do you have literally your second biggest IP, maybe third?
At this point, considering the fall off that Halo's had, Forza Horizon is genuinely their biggest IP.
Well,
Call of Duty. Second biggest IP down.
But yeah, one of your biggest, and let's be really generous, one of your top five IPs is set in Japan. And you do that trailer, you do no demo, you have no devs out here, no interviews, no fucking talking to anyone, nothing. Just see you next year. And by TGS next year, it might be fucking out. Who knows? And
probably will be.
And then, yeah, I imagine the blowout will be at Summer Games Fest, right? But, and then you've also got Ninja Gaiden 4. And
the interesting thing about the Forza Horizon 6 stuff, and I guess Ninja Gaiden 4 to that point, is like this weird push they're having with the Xbox Ally, where the base model is basically just the Steam Deck. It's the exact same chip.
Mm.
And they're saying all of our upcoming games are going to be able to run on this thing.
But that can't be that far off Series S, can it?
Steam Deck is very far off Series S. For one thing, it has half the CPU cores, and it has a little under half the GPU cores.
But there is a difference between, let's take Monster Hunter, for instance, right? There is a difference in terms of how the game handles the work between Monster Hunter Rise Xbox version running in its very specific Series S profile and the PC version of Monster Hunter Rise trying to run that on really like weak hardware. Yeah. There is a significant measurable difference. So I think that's the element really.
But it is fascinating to kind of see it. It feels like Microsoft is trying to push into the Japanese market from a different tack this time. Like, fuck Xbox, like consoles, like PC gaming handhelds, I guess. It's weird.
Well, their whole thing is that they don't necessarily think you need to own an Xbox. And thereby,
on the same token, they would say that new Asus handheld is an Xbox. So.
Well, everything is an Xbox.
Yeah.
I mean, in this sense, though, I'm like this is where GeForce Now is fascinating. I saw a lot of GeForce Now advertising at the show.
I didn't, which is interesting.
Just not big adverts, but just stuff like you go and play a game, and on the corner of the monitor, there would be a sticker that was like, "You can play this without a console or on your phone through GeForce Now."
You know, that does make sense, because I feel like if any, like, one region would be really strong for that service, it would be Japan.
I always thought if Xbox was going to have any success in Japan, I thought it was going to be xCloud.
Yeah.
But they appear to have given up on that a bit. But GeForce Now is carrying that torch, and it's way better than xCloud, to be fair. Xbox, I've been a bit baffled by them this week. I'm not saying they needed a massive stand, but probably an area in the business area, maybe show a bit more forward, so facilitate some Ninja Gaiden and dev stuff with press.
Which, I mean, there were appointments for Ninja Gaiden 4.
But wasn't for Xbox, so that's the weird thing.
Yeah.
And I understand Zelda wasn't through, Hyrule Warriors wasn't through Nintendo.
Well, that's because Koei Tecmo's publishing it in Japan, which is weird because, like, Ninja Gaiden 4, Microsoft is publishing it even in Japan. So,
It baffles me. Anyway, that's a very non-role-playing game note to end on. But hey-ho. But that's us live from Tokyo. And maybe we'll do this again. I don't know. Maybe we'll be doing it again in December, maybe.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be at the game.
I think I'm going to be going.
Yeah.
So we're now photobombing a lovely photo that some people are taking. So which means we probably should sign up. But yeah, we should do this again at the Game Awards. Maybe try and get some special guests in. That'd be fun. So yeah, thank you for listening in to our TGS ramble. With apologies, because we are all very tired. And we will see you soon. Well, we'll see, you will, James, we'll probably see them next week on the normal podcast.
Yeah.
Me, probably not. But yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. See ya.